process of where we are. Some of the subtleties and detail we remove for clarity, so that you can see the overall process of what we're doing. The first on the top were the school level proposal reviews. This isn't the creation of the schools and the process that we're going through. You'll notice that we have on the left hand side are the proposed schools, and those colors signify where they are in the translation process for making things happen. So those in the yellow are still in the dialogue consultative phase. Either they're in the 90-day window, because some of the new schools were in sequence when we first began. Some asked for a 30-day extension, and so those proposed schools are still engaged in a consultative period. The ones in the green is the data where we've gotten all of the information, and now we're preparing the first plans for the faculty to look at. So we're preparing those plans. Those plans are going to be going out continuously as we finish them up next week and the following week. The blue is the next stage, where the plan gets presented to the different constituency groups through two different routes for actual voting and providing their assessment. As you can see, despite the fact that it's so big, I still need glasses. As you can see, there are two places of where it goes. One is the academic review, where the plans are going to both the faculty and graduate council. They have 60 days for reviewing the plan. The other is the contractual, where it goes to academic units and the faculty association. The academic units get to vote on the plans. That input gets provided to the faculty senate and graduate council. And the faculty association gets to write a report, which then goes to the faculty senate and graduate council, who then make their own evaluation and votes. And from there, it moves out. At this point, we engage in the completion of the RME documentation, and depending upon the nature of the school process, it goes to the board for review. This is something that we're going to have to discuss: where you want to review, where you want to just want to approve the process, and following that, if appropriate, go into the IBHG for appropriate notification. So this is where we are with regards to the proposals. As you can see, it's moving along smartly. As I mentioned earlier, we're continually modifying and changing things during the consultative period, and even now, after we've done that, we've adopted some changes that most recently came from many of our creative art departments. And I agreed that we'll create a new college of creative arts or creativity. We're still working on the final name. So this is the process for the school level proposal review process in which we're engaged in. The process below is the actual implementation of the college realignment that was approved by the board in the financial stability plan. In that financial stability plan, you outline the closing with discontinuance of the College of Science and realignment of the programs. The college review process, what we're planning on doing is acting on that financial stability plan, reducing colleges down by one as prescribed in that plan, and then also engaging in the renaming of the colleges that reflect where the schools are going to be. The other element associated with that is that while we won't move the departments right now, the intention is that until this whole framework is done, the intention is that the departments which were normally associated with the schools that would be housed in that locations would be moved there as a unit, as a departmental unit, and then after the schools get reviewed and created, they would then merge and the school would be formed in those locations. The procedure which we are going to follow, or that right now we're not proposed to move any of the departments that unless it doesn't make any sense at all to keep them where they are. So for example, the College of Applied Science and Arts, CASA, that college is going to be renamed the College of Health and Human Services. So the many of the programs associated with that college are coming from other sources. But we're not going to move those health programs until the schools get formed, get go through the review process until a little bit later. But we're going to move out, we'll recommend moving out starting in July 1, the departments associated with transportation. It doesn't make sense to keep a flight training program in the College of Health and Human Services. So I have all of the details, which I don't want to bury you with, of how all the moves are all going here. And if you would like, I'd be happy to provide that for you and submit that to you so you can see where all the chess pieces are moving. But I didn't want to, we get so buried in all of the details. I didn't want to do that at this time. I wanted to show you what the overall process is. Sure. And make you aware that unless the board has a different direction, that I was going to begin the RME process for the renaming of the colleges and the discontinuance of the College of Science has been approved by the Financial Stability Plan that'll be effective in July 1. And the reason why I need to do this now is I need to begin planning on staffing. I have to know, as part of this reorganization, we have to figure out where we're going to reallocate staff. I need to put a staffing committee together, so that a university staffing committee together, seeing where all of the staff lines are going to go. So I need to do that. I need to start putting the accounting mechanisms in place so the budgetary things are done, so that we're ready to go. If I don't do that now, we're gonna have a real challenge moving forward, because those are the mechanics that need to happen.
Okay. Question.
Is that possible to do that?
Excuse me. I didn't hear you.
Is it possible to do it in that time frame?
Let me dive in with a couple questions. We'll maybe get to the answer.
Okay.
We'll see. So at this point, we're looking at parallel school college.
Yes.
Kind of both moving forward together.
Yes.
Which can make sense, particularly because you're not talking about moving around any department yet.
Right.
Given our previous discussion, we said possibly,
but
for now, no.
Yeah.
Okay. Then you had made a comment in your remarks about whether it's the board approving process or, I guess by implication, discrete proposals.
Yes.
I mean, I'm on record, and that's going to be my advice to the board, indicating as quickly as they can feed up, that's fine. But it's going to be the discrete proposals themselves. It's simply to approve the process, I think, does not do what you're called upon to do under policy in terms of reorganization. And as we've met with the campus, have determined that by any stretch of the definition, this is a reorganization. Now, what we've said is to the campus, if these come 10 RMEs at a time, RME, again, is the Board of Higher Education name, term for the document, which is the vehicle to effectuate this change. So when you hear that use of the term, that's what it is. So that, you know, Carlo works on the campus with the groups, doing what they do, following contract, other processes in place. But at some point, this has to get distilled into that RME, as you're seeing. That's what I see then coming to the board for action. And but you might be getting, let's be very creative or inventive. It could be the case that 6, 7, 8 of these come at a time,
exactly,
depending on how they feed out of the gate. We don't want to do anything that gets in the way.
And I imagine you're going to find that you're going to have those blocks that come through.
Yes.
There's going to be several that are held further back. But we'll
be it'll be like a horse race. I've used that analogy. Everybody comes out of the chute at the same time, but others make it.
So question, and I'm just trying to understand the process.
That's why
I'm not
saying. I know. I'm trying to get there. So in terms of this RME, okay, so all the vetting has occurred, right? And it's been voted on, it's been ratified by...
Contractually. On the contractual side, the so-called Article 9 process with the schools.
Okay, that's what I'm trying to understand. So then the document then is prepared and comes before us, before it goes to IBHE.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So each school... will have an RME then. Am I correct?
Yes, correct.
Yes. Now, understand, not to complicate, but right now these are written proposals. They're not in the RME form.
No.
The contract specifies how you put together that proposal. And the campus has done that. They've fed it out to the appropriately impacted faculty in that 90 to 100 day review is what Carlo's saying. That's now coming to an end. It's it's finishing up.
Okay.
And you're gonna see votes taking place on those proposals accordingly that will then turn into plans under the contract. I'm not going to Brent because I want to get my terminology right, but they become plans.
They become plans before they vote on the plan.
Yes,
they become plans. They go from the departments to the provost office.
Yes.
They become a plan in the provost office and go back to the department.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, all good.
So that's the green to blue.
Yeah, exactly. So program change plan. So then at what point it gets ready to move to the constituency bodies, and I'm looking just at the schools, you've got Faculty Senate Graduate Council, that somewhere along the way that's going to get transformed into an RME, is my understanding.
Mm-hmm.
That this plan now to get in the right format for BHE, which is the same format the constituency bodies are always used to see. They do RMEs all the time. It's every meeting, all the time, for smaller changes. So that RME gets prepared. That becomes the vehicle Faculty Senate Graduate Council uses. They've got their time for review, and then it comes out of there with a vote, and then at that point, because it's deemed a reorganization that the board must act on, it comes to the board. And then understand in certain things it doesn't demand a board action. That there is the ability in some RMEs for me just to sign off. And that happens fairly frequently too. The nature of these, we do feel it constitutes reorganization, which under policy you all have to look at and take a vote on. We get our vote at the board level, goes up to BHE. I haven't forgotten your question.
Sure.
Now, the Faculty Senate Graduate Council 60 days, is that an informal kind of agreement you've reached with these bodies? Because in some ways, they don't have a time frame.
It's actually a time frame that's written on the standard RME form.
Okay, so we've got that as a means to kind of gauge the timing on this.
Yes.
And as we heard President Schalwitz describe this morning, or might have been one of the other speakers, I guess.
Yes.
They're looking at the process by which they're going to review these.
Yeah, they're putting together committees. So
gotcha.
They understand they're all going to become, it's going to be a lot of work, and so they can gear up and deal with it.
Gotcha,
yes. They're comprehensive and forthright.
And they've got, as mentioned, three different... This is all new territory, remember, in terms of this magnitude of change. So I think, again, whether it was Kathy or another speaker, they talked about they've got three different approaches for process on this that they'll... They'll look at, they'll weigh and decide which one they're going to follow, and then get that undertaken. Now I'm coming back to, no, not yet, Shelley. On the college level, there's not, as Carlo maybe restated when I talked to the staff, there's no Article 9 impact, so that's why you see that condensed. It's a more direct route. Another thing that's going to come into play there, given that you're not moving the departments at this point, is, and clearly, the financial sustainability plan that the board passed last summer did have the college closing in there that Carlo referenced. So they moved forward. He announced it and people went, wait, what? Well, the board acted on that. These other colleges right now are name change.
Yes.
Name changes. So we're gonna have, probably have some discussion among staff with IBHE. Okay, given that this new college could look like something else, CASA now becomes Health and Human Services and envisioned as someday some programs will come out, others will come in. Is the name change something that, does that need to come to the board? Or is that something I can sign off? So we've got some work to do on that and a little research to undertake before we figure that out, but that'll happen. Now, Dr. Portwood, I think it becomes it's not impossible for that to all take place by July 1. It's not impossible. I think it's pushing it. I think it's a challenge, but it's not impossible. And I think Carlo will tell me if he doesn't agree with this answer. I think you're gonna have some where there seems to be support, everybody's ready to move, that could go very quickly. Where the votes are clear, there's no iffiness. I think a couple were referenced maybe earlier, and I think you could see those happen fairly quickly. Typically, graduate council requires two readings?
Two readings, unless they vote not to.
Okay, so they can waive rules. So it could be the case that you might see some of those strongly supported proposals, plans, RMEs, come through. And what we said to Carlo is, while we're not in the business of calling a whole bunch of extra meetings, if there was a need to deal with something, because remember, now you've got to balance your board of higher ed, and we think we're at the point where on the board of trustees side, if there was a bunch of stuff that got passed, moved forward, was sitting, you know, was dammed up behind, ready to move, I told Carl, I think our board would be willing to entertain coming together for a special.
Not as a current and pending. Luke?
No.
Not as a current.
No. Otherwise, that would be the end of that.
It's a special meeting topic, correct? We can call it as a special meeting with the 48 hours advance notice on that. So it makes more sense to almost treat something like that. So if we have a stack of RMEs, and I'm hypothetically, I mean, I'm just trying to think from a flow standpoint.
That could make
we just simply have
a special
meeting
and
just
do that.
Which it looks like when you said Northern had all those special meetings, was that as a result of a reorg?
No.
They reorged their president's office. Let's just leave it at that.
Okay. Well, I just wondered if that was the process because of the various. I mean, it seems to me that I'm not comfortable voting on the process. I would prefer to vote on the plans, the RMEs.
Yeah, what I don't understand is you can do all that you just talked about without the board having approved the plan?
Under the process, it comes to you after all of those steps, yes. Yes. But that's where you have the opportunity to say, yay or nay. I mean, it is a...
To undo it, huh?
To unwind it.
That seems like a backward process to me, but I guess I'm the only one that has that concern.
Yeah.
So, but help me understand, because up to that point, it gets here with support, I'm assuming, of the faculty, the department heads, that
it
doesn't get here unless it has that support.
No, it gets there with their vote.
Here's where things are going to get interesting. You could see things move forward with a very closely split vote. You could see things move forward, I guess, with a negative vote coming forward. It can still all of this becomes advisory in that sense. But then what comes into play, and this is, you know, this is the definition of board work at the governance level. You're going to take a look at that. If you've got a vote that's split 50-50, or if you've got a vote that's a negative vote on the part of the impacted faculty that comes before you, you're going to have to look at all that and weigh. I'm going to have to think about what I do in that case in terms of my recommendation. What, you know, the ones that are easy, I think you'll see come through the
process first.
They're going to be the ones that move first.
I mean, aren't those going to be the ones
that
are
going to be the ones
first?
That move first?
Just because they're going to speed through?
Yeah. Yeah.
So the first one should be easy,
we assume.
It'll get harder as we go along.
Yes. Yeah.
All right.
So, you know, so that it will spread out over time as these make their way. And it could be the case that while the RME speaks to a 60-day period, if Carlo's sitting with lack of approval on something, my guess is you probably wouldn't turn it down if it took 80 days. If you think you can do...
We have some that have done that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you'll see it spread out over time.
Sure.
Just a question. So this process follows the contractual agreements with the faculty?
It follows the contractual agreements and I think the standards of faculty governance that we've exercised here.
So the process does. So I guess it's unclear to me on why, if this is baked into the contract with faculty, why would we change that, the process? I'm not talking about the RMEs,
Vote
on that, but in terms of this flow chart, this process.
We don't have any control, do we?
We don't have no control.
That's already in the contract.
But I felt it was important that we talk about these things, about where they are. I felt that there was a level of confusion about what was going on and how it was going on. And the reason why I distilled it down like this, I felt it was important to see what the process was laid out in a way, then be able to see where the different parts of the program was progressing, how it was progressing. My idea is I'm going to take this, put it up on the website, and it has different elements of the schools change. We'll see the colors change of where they're associated, so the whole community can see where the different schools are as they move through the process.
And when the contract was agreed upon, it was agreed upon by both administration and faculty at that time, correct?
By the faculty association.
By the faculty association. So,
yes, sir.
So I guess I don't know what feedback I should even give regarding the process that's already been agreed upon contractually with faculty.
So I guess I would jump in and say that I feel like our role is, so, right, the academic units vote and the faculty association votes to the 60-day period right there, right? Those are advisory. Right, so there's these ones up here. Some of them are negative votes, right? So if we get something handed to us,
actually, Sam, they're not negative votes. What they've elected, there's no voting on plan because there is no plan. What they voted on is saying that we need more time to discuss it.
Okay.
That they said there was not a negative vote on what was being done. What they said was we needed more time.
Sure.
That's what the vote
there's,
was.
There's some of these I may come back as negative votes. So there's a potential that there is a negative vote that's going to come before the board, that then we are going to have to make a decision on whether or not to basically value the faculty's opinions on the matter of what's going to directly affect them.
But I think what Trustee Samborski is saying is, I'm not sure we can vote on the process because the process is already delineated.
That's right.
Yeah,
so what he's suggesting,
agreed upon.
We don't have any say so at this point in time. Which, I'm sorry, so to me, all we'll be voting on is the RMEs.
Right,
yes.
To Sam's point.
Yes,
we'll
that's
be,
right.
That's when we enter this process that's already been agreed upon, is voting on the RMEs.
Yeah, the contractual language, kind of to Sam's point, gets you part of the way. The IBHE process, the standing constituency body operating papers, and the IBHE process gets you the other part of the, this is kind of the second half of the way, and then it's teed up to the board. There is one good element that we think holds so far, and that is the indication from IBHE staff is that they will handle all of their, I don't think they're signing in blood, but they're saying IBHE will handle this as a staff review. They are not viewing this as something that will have to go before the Board of Higher Ed, which is good because then that saves the problem of the their meeting schedule and the staff get it turned around with them 60 days or whatever.
Carlo, help me.
Which could be the problem on July 1.
Help me understand then how soon before the first RME is presented to this board.
I think I'm hoping we're going to have something in April.
Okay.
Because there's the easy ones.
The easy ones. They're going to be some. They're going to be some.
The supportive ones. I should
the
say.
Supportive ones. Yeah. They're going to move. That, a lot of this depends upon what happens with the Senate and the Graduate Council, whether they can get it through fast enough. But for sure, by the middle end of spring, we should have some moving through.
Okay.
One other point to make, which we hadn't talked about, so you know that the original plan that Carlo presented also had multiple new units of instruction. And as you've heard him talk about it, it's been within the aspect that once new schools come out of the ground, get formed, that it would be incumbent upon the new schools to determine the new programs they may want to add. Some, there were some boxes on the original chart that were prospective, you know, supposing these might be new areas to look at. Homeland Security was one example, et cetera. Those will be treated, and I'm assuming that comes as schools come out of the ground.
Sure.
Those new units of instruction will require Board of Higher Education approval. So in some ways, kind of follow the, you know, a similar process, go through the constituency bodies to this board, but there will be a Board of Higher Ed requirement on what's called judge an NUI, a new unit of instruction, or an NPR, a new program request. That they will act on those, but staff will take care of all the rest of this.
It'll be a significant number. There's already about 8 or 9 of them in the works right now because the faculty are excited about them, and they're already drafting the RMEs and they want to get them through.
Which I think is good.
Get them through the system. So you're going to probably see some of them going through also. But they don't normally go to the board for approval.
Yeah, when I was sitting here, I paused. And typically on a new unit of instruction, you just inform, I sign, the Board of Higher Ed does that.
The Board of Higher Ed does, but it doesn't go to this board.
I'm almost afraid to ask this question. So when we get the hard RMEs, the difficult ones, and they've been through this entire process, if hypothetically speaking, we vote down as a board one of those. Can that process start? I mean, what happens? I mean, part of me feels like, okay, there's this entire, what you were getting at before, it seems a little odd that you go through the entire process and then it comes before us. And if this board shoots down that process for one of these colleges or schools, then what? What do we do then?
I think which we have to do is do an assessment. Do we want to keep in the context of the entire university? Do you want to keep things the way they are, or do you want to go back and see if we can revisit the process, find out what the primary objection was, and see if that primary objection was one of managerial, scholastic, and what the impact is. And then if the argument is that you feel the reason why it was voted down was meritorious and you wanted them to be accommodated, then we have to start that process for those elements over at the beginning again. Put together a new, continue a consultative period and do an RME and go through.
Or status quo is maintained.
Exactly.
So that's going to be my
Yeah, I mean, let's say Department of English. I'm just going to pick on them. So let's say nothing moves there. Nothing moves. Even unto this board level. SIU Carbondale still has a Department of English with 45 faculty members or whatever whatever it is. The question of where they're housed is something that the campus can take under consideration and make a decision on.
Yes.
And you keep operating. I think in answer to your question, as we've talked about, potentially you could see some hybrid. You might have some legacy departments that continue to stay there and do what they do, because we're not going to get rid of English, whereas you are going to have some new schools, some new collegiate units that will move forward, and they'll organize and do what they do and lead us, you know, onto their new work. You'll have pieces come and pieces that don't,
and I believe what will happen is you're gonna see things and say, well, I think the value of keeping it the way it is overweighs the value of the merging that we're proposing, or you're gonna see that, well, no, I think the merging of it overrides the concerns of the faculty. And this is where the board is going to be making a decision. And it's going to have to be done in context of what the plan is and vision for the institution.
That I absolutely correct. This is the nature of board work. This is what a governing body does. And that's going to be fed up to you in pieces over the coming months.
And I'm not going to be just the only one asking questions, but I have one more. Are there any departments that we aren't touching?
No, not right now. And
We're making changes everywhere. We're attempting changes everywhere.
Yes, we are. And while it would be nice sometimes to say, well, we won't do some places, some others, that as soon as you say, I'm not going to change you, and everybody says, I don't want to be changed either, and then pretty soon you can't change anything. And so it's the process that we're going through. And again, the decision-making body that we go through this, we are recrafting and building SIUC post-eclipse is how I like to think it. We have pre-eclipse SIUC and post-eclipse. This is post-eclipse SIUC, and the nature of our institution is going to change, and we have to decide what's the best way for this to happen. That's why we're engaged in this dialogue. That's the reason why as the faculty are coming more and more together and dialoguing, they're coming up with this wonderful idea. They basically called me up on the phone with some of that. We have this great idea. I said, tell me about it. And I asked me to support. So they wrote me a little handwritten note. I looked at it. I said, I can support that. They haven't even given me the documents, but I'm holding the placeholder for it because I believe it'll come. So, they're engaging and they're being creative. It's happening and it's going to evolve.
So I'm going to start with you, Luke. Let's just make our, because you had your hand up.
Yes. So there's a specific time the Faculty Senate and Graduate Council get to put in their feedback. Is there any time for undergraduate Senate and staff Senate to get that feedback as well? I think that
that was during the consultative period. Okay. We get up at the beginning when we first created the plan.
Joe?
You know, I guess mine's more of a comment. It's going to be hard for me to get excited about supporting status quo. My hope is that this process that's been agreed upon by the stakeholders and the faculty, that we really, at the end of this, those RMEs reflect change, reflect making those units better, more attractive to students, and certainly, I know we're getting the cart a little before the horse, but certainly my hope is that we don't, that this process doesn't play through and we end up leading to basically being back to where we started.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing all the input and the recommendations.
I guess I have a very brief line of questioning in regards to one particular program. The context for this questions are last fall. There was a meeting that was happening on campus about the proposed police academy, and I reached out to Matt Bauman and asked an official, to be polite, basically asked an official capacity if I could attend that meeting, and I was denied as a board member to attend. So then I asked the chancellor's office if I could have basically the minutes of that meeting and what was discussed there. And I was promised that, and I asked that via email, and I was never gotten that. So then in one or two face-to-face encounters with Matt Bauman, assistant, I had reminded him to please fill me in on what was discussed at that meeting, and I had never received it. So since we're talking about the reorganization process, I guess I have a couple questions in regards to that. What are the local, state, and federal groups responsible for approving it, and what are the remaining hurdles in the implementation of the Police Training Institute?
The Public Safety Academy?
Yeah, the name's jumped around a bit, but.
We have to be, I believe, approved by the Illinois, I don't remember.
It has a complicated.
It's a real law enforcement.
Yeah, thank you.
Police Training Commission, or it's I can get you the exact name.
What's going on? And who, I guess, are the main individuals and groups on the campus working to secure the police academy, public safety?
Who's working on it? It's being worked on by elements of the staff, by the our police chief is acting as a consultant. The
Chief Newman or Chief Grubbs?
Excuse me?
The campus police or Carbondale police?
Actually, both of them are involved in the committee looking at this, yes. Process with the Department of Criminal Justice. We talked with them and they're going to be engaged as we move forward. initial discussions right now have been just with the police department, wouldn't that they be willing to support this enterprise? It's a politically sensitive issue. I think President Dunn would agree about creating a new training entity, because there's level of competition associated with the existing ones, and there are some complicated rules about who can attend and what the funding is and what has to be done to safeguard it. And so we've engaged in significant dialogue with them over what the requirements are to make this all happen.
And what's the timeline we're looking at for it?
For an assessment?
No, for its opening, I suppose.
Oh, we don't have a timeline for it being open just yet. We're still working on trying to get approvals to see if we're going to get approval from the state to make it happen.
Okay.
And one of the things that will be a challenge in this is if there's a need for an appropriation to get it,
which they will be,
out of the ground, because typically on a police institute, that's the cost is getting covered by the hiring police authority, you know, whether it's a city or a county or whatever. Where in this case, what's different about this proposal is the fact that a student could do it while in the process of getting the degree.
Which is the unique feature associated with it.
Right, that's kind of the selling point of the proposal. But that means there's also no city or county or municipal entity to pick up the cost. So it's going to take some sort of appropriation. We talked about the fact that we really, if the case is made to support it going forward, I think it with that commission, then they need to be willing to go after some funding for it. We don't, not to be crass, but we don't necessarily want it as a chip against the SIU list requests, and would hope that they would advance it in terms of their appropriation authority. And we'll see where we go. I've also, as Carla knows, I've also asked Mark Colanis to just kind of stay in contact and monitor how things are going. At this point, I think they have, you know, they have a number of questions that, you know, they've posed based upon the proposition, and I know the campus will try to respond to that, and then we see where we go from there.
We see where we go from there.
One more question. Departments are still going away in chairs? Because we didn't even talk about that today. You know, we talked about schools and colleges, but I know there's been a couple changes to the plan lately, but as of now, it's still universal elimination of departments and chairs.
The title of departments are going away.
Okay.
Is relevant. So, because the department has sits at the same level in an organizational hierarchy as dictated by policy and CBA documents, a department cannot be inside of a school. All right, because they're both at the same level organization, so you can't have the same. So to circumvent that, you change the name from department to program, but you keep all of the other activities that are associated with the department there. And then by doing that, you can put it inside the school. The contract for the faculty union opens up this month, and our intention is to change the wording in the contract to enable us to go rename those programs back as departments once the contract is done.
Thanks.
Does that help?
Mm-hmm. Well, now it may burden me with information then.
Okay.
So let's go back to our hypothetical Department of English.
Mm-hmm.
If it moves forward as an RME,
yes,
is not supported at the board level, doesn't move forward to BHE, it doesn't happen for whatever reason. So that structure of a unit of English still exists. Would that then entail just keeping that unit but changing its name to a school then, potentially?
We could either potentially change the name of the school or just leave it out.
So then that sense of department still would be there. Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay. I'm with you.
That's why they're real ramifications in terms of making these decisions. Yes.
And I'm not, just to be clear, I wasn't suggesting that I predisposed to vote on any RME. I haven't seen an RME, to be clear.
No.
I didn't know what an RME was until today. Let's be clear on that. I was just trying to think out the logical steps for this board in terms of process and in terms of timing of meetings, because we could be meeting more often than not. How many potential RMEs are we looking at? When we get to our meeting management section, I'm aiming to know this.
20.
20, okay.
21.
But they're not all gonna come at the same time.
Exactly, they're not gonna be at the same time.
So there may be a batch of five of them or six of them, then
that's
maybe
what,
one or two.
That's exactly why I was asking from a meeting management standpoint.
Yeah. Right.
Yep, yep.
You know, but then that, you know, we haven't spent much time talking about the second element, which is the creation of the colleges, the renaming of the colleges, of why that's important. Because if we're gonna rename the colleges and as we create the schools, we need to make sure that we have the departments, everything housed within the appropriate structures that we need.
But that would occur afterwards though, correct?
It's gonna happen before and after.
Parallel.
It's parallel.
Okay. Sorry, I'm just trying to understand the
process. If you have a college X, and let's say I want to create, the plan was we have 10, 15 departments inside there, five feet, and the original proposal was to get five going to come from each different school, and two of the RMEs for two schools go through with flying colors, everybody agrees, and one of them, there is a lot of unrest, or you decide that we need to go back to the drawing board and re-talk it. What's going to end up happening is you're going to have those five departments then sitting on the outside, but they're still going to be someplace, which means you're still going to be in a college organizational structure where they fit and belong. Otherwise, we'll have something like the flight aviation program being inside a college of health and human services, which doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So some of those things are going to have to be moved, even when there's still departments waiting for the schools to be created.
So one of the challenges on this will be, which Carl well knows, and we've talked about this, is as they go on a parallel, I mean, given now that you're going to go on a parallel track and not move departments, there's going to have to be kind of a tiptoe through the tulips on whether or not a college proposal will move back. What happens with a college proposal when there may be yet pending uncertainty about a school?
Right.
But so that's
exactly. And there'll be some which will have to move. We'll have to move. So when we say we're not going to move, there's going to be some that we will move. We'll try and move with right at the creation. So if we create this College of STEM, which is one of the colleges where we hope to have the School of Transportation to be in place. So as we do the renaming, we have the school. I will move the Department of Aviation of Flight Management or the Aviation Technology within the proposed College of STEM, but it'll be there as a regular department until it gets merged. This is where it's going to get confusing, is why I didn't want to kind of go that way. Some of the programs will fit fine in the meantime before the creative school. Some of the departments in the School of Biological Sciences, they can probably stay where they are and not have to move to the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences until the School of Biological Sciences is created. I mean, there are elements where it's they can reside just as well in the short term where they belong. But I didn't want to move all of the departments simultaneously before the school votes had processed, because I didn't want people to feel that somehow I was predetermining the creation of the schools until it was agreed to. Does this make any sense to anybody? I know this is really hard. And
part of the information that you had in that packet that you just kind of alluded to there,
yeah.
You can it talks about that.
It shows you where different pieces are going and where each one is ultimately going to move to. It goes.
Well, I was just going to say, probably one of the things we should supply subsequent to the meeting is just all of the schools that are sitting out there, the new college
I have
college
these,
names
these
out
all,
there.
These are all the moving parts that are associated with all the different.
Because we've had a couple of new schools proposed.
New college proposed.
Psychology was one. Yeah. Computer science was going to be standalone school. We probably need to get them a current listing of all of those. So
I have that all here.
Okay.
We'll get it shipped out. It's like 28 pages.
I think understood.
Any other questions so that we can move on? Okay. Thank you, Chancellor. Appreciate that. All right. The next item on our agenda then is we've termed it trustee issues, and that and meeting management are going to kind of run together, so we can hopefully get through all that by 2:15. One of the items, I think, it says Trustee Portwood's name behind it, but it was actually a carryover item that, with diversity and recruitment, that came up in a timely fashion yesterday, and seems to be a reoccurring theme.
Yeah, so if Dr. Portwood went, why is my name on this? It really was simply something that had come up at maybe not long after the previous retreat. I don't really recall, but actually keep a listing of all potential retreat topics and stuff that comes up where I say, or you know, the chair would say, ah, let's put this on the retreat agenda. So this may have its genesis even going back to the diversity discussion. All I know is I had Shirley's name by it in terms of how we could take on some efforts around minority recruitment. It now may be the case that, you know, we've kind of subsumed it under the diversity initiatives, I don't know, but it was still listed in my cheat sheet, so I put it on there, that's all.
But honestly, I mean, I've sort of led the charge and made a commitment in front of the House that we're going to talk, not just talk the talk, but walk the walk, that we're interested in not only minority recruitment of students, but also faculty. So I think that that's something, whatever, to what end we have to effectuate that, that's
well, as
what
I mentioned,
we need to do.
As I mentioned with Wes, we do think there may be an approach to be taken on the faculty and professional staff side. And we might be able to start to craft a plan, a little plan around that. And then obviously Representative Davis is going to have us diving back into
right.
the water, appropriately so, on minority student recruitment. And that, it strikes me that, you know, I know that Carlo particularly is going to talk to Representative Davis, and that may then augur for coming together and just taking these topics and putting them together on a work session and say, here's where we are and what we think we ought to be doing.
Just so you know, this started in the context of, the question was about African studies.
Yes.
And he was pretty particular about the comments and the feedback that he had gotten. So, and I think you answered it appropriately, and he seemed to be really engaged. So that sort of started the discussion that we'd already been having. So I think when we, you know, over the next year, we can work on these issues. And
yeah, and Cheryl, if there was something more specific, glad to take that on too, but it's just
I had prepared a 20-minute presentation. but I noticed you run out my time.
Well, feel free. I'm ready to sit back and listen.
Okay. Let me just condense it then. I think minority recruitment and retention is something that's going to require a commitment on the part of the entire university rather than a committee or an officer or other specific people who are dedicated to it. We all have to do it, not just the university community, but the larger Southern Illinois community as well. To that end, I talked to a number of people in the university and the larger community about suggestions that they had. And so I'll just tell you some of them very briefly. And some of them have already been alluded to in the session earlier. One of the things that I think would be very important is to get more alumni engagement at all levels in terms of fundraising, mentoring, and otherwise being engaged in increasing not only minority recruitment and retention, but for the entire student body. One of the groups that I have communicated with is one that's called the Concerned Black Alumni and Citizens. It is a newly formed organization that met in Carbondale for the first time February the 15th, 2018. The group has planned ongoing meetings to develop further a white paper in which they are laying out their views about what should change, how, and perhaps even more importantly, their commitment to working with the university and the community to effectuate minority recruitment and retention. They've got a lot of really, really good ideas. They have another meeting scheduled for later in this month. And they have done a draft of the white paper, which I've read, and they are working on a final draft, which they're going to make available to the community. Another idea that came up was the importance of increasing the cultural and social activities on the campus. At the Edwardsville campus, there are a lot of activities. At the Carbondale campus, there are some, but from talking to people in the Carbondale community and in the Carbondale university community, it seems like there's a good deal more that could be done here. I've read something in the student newspaper that indicated Carlo talking about the things that he has in mind to do here, which really very much dovetailed with things that people with whom I have spoken talked about. But they talked about creating social and cultural activities that make people feel welcome on campus, who make them want to go on campus and be involved in some kind of way. And I'm not sure it makes that much difference specifically what the activities are, so long as they're activities that engage people's imagination and want them to show up. Things like plays, concerts, trivia night, talent contests, field trips, all kinds of things that would be of interest. In fact, the Edwardsville campus, they even have a Meridian Club, and one of the things they do is a contest. I don't remember what they call it, but it has to do with encouraging people to make or wear interesting hats. And that really gets a lot of attention and a lot of interest on the part of people from the larger community as well. In one case, it was the biggest hat, or it might be the fanciest hat, or it might be, but it gets people's interest, and it gets them to want to participate. Another thing that came up was the idea of spaces on campus that are welcoming, like a diversity center, a cultural center, where people can go, and they can meet and interact with other similarly situated. They can have mentoring, they can have counseling, they can use the computers, they can look at books and other print media, they can be involved in programs. Maybe in some cases they have clubs that focus on dance or might focus on other elements of culture. And at the very least, people can go there and just be there and know that there will be other people who are in a similar situation. Another thing that came up was fundraising, creative ways of getting fundraising done. One of the things that SIUE did, I think this was last year, is to ask people, I think this was in 2017, to donate $20.17.
The tassels.
And yes, and then they had tassels for graduation.
For tassels. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And separate tassels.
And $20.17 was in the within the means of virtually anyone. And so it made them realize that they could be involved in establishing that connection of thinking in terms of donating to your university, to your alma mater. And one day, they're gonna have more than $20.17. And hopefully, they'll donate it. But even modest amounts make people feel connected. Another thing that's important is peer recruitment at all levels, faculty, students, administration, staff, everyone be involved in recruitment and retention. At SIUE, for example, in the 1990s, the history department had 16 full-time faculty with very little diversity. There were two women, one African American. And since I was there, that meant I got to be counted for
four. You're a twofer.
and one Asian, and the rest were white men. The department made a commitment to become more diverse. And within, I don't know, 5 years, maybe 10 years, I don't remember quite what, it ended up where half the women in the history department were, half the people in the history department were women. Four were African Americans. One African American specialization was African history. Another specialization was Asian history. Specifically, her first field was the Japanese history. Her second field, Chinese history. And she was fluent in Japanese language and culture. Even those who initially were resistant to it, faculty members, after it was underway and we had so much diversity, they were really proud of it. It would have been hard to tell by their responses who were the ones who resisted, because everybody was proud of it. We gave a conference, and a history conference on African Americans in the land of Lincoln, and everybody in the department came and proudly wore little badges that says, "I'm history," and helped to welcome people to the campus. We had a banquet, and at each table there was a faculty member from history to engage others in conversation. And the response to that was incredible, not only on the part of our faculty and students, because students, we told any student who wanted to come, they could come for free. And we got some money. We wrote a grant to get that. And the chancellor said that office would pick up anything that we needed. After we did it the first year, the chancellor said to me, "Would you commit to doing this every year, and any shortfall you have, we'll cover?" Because it was that kind of successful. But that was getting people engaged. I had another experience recently where I met a former student from SIUE, and he was telling me that he was teaching at the community college over in St. Louis Community College at Forest Park. And he was working on his PhD, and he would soon finish his dissertation, and I believe he's going to defend it by the end of this academic year. And he indicated that what had prompted him to go on for a PhD is because one of his professors had told him he was smart and he should get a PhD. And that made him realize, wow, maybe I should get a PhD. And those kinds of comments, contacts, really, really make a difference. What I had planned to do, well, actually I had planned to do a lot of wonderful things and I ran out of time, but I planned to ask you a question and try to get some discussion on it, but instead I'll just ask the question and let you think on it, is what more can each of us do in terms of recruitment and retention of minorities, but also of majority students too? Not just students, but also faculty, administrators, and staff. We are really pretty low on that. We really are. I wanted you to think in terms of several things. One, why did you select the university that you attended? Why did you remain at that university until you graduated? And why did others drop out? And maybe we can think in terms of that and somehow pass that on to help other people come to the university and remain at the university and not be among those who dropped out.
Do we still have Kappa Carnival at SIU Carbondale? You know what I'm talking about?
Kappa's doing an event. I don't think it's Kappa Carnival.
They used to have Kappa Carnival in the 80s and 90s, and drew a lot of minority African American to the SIU campus, and it was a weekend, and there'd be hundreds and hundreds of them, and they'd have events all at the university, in the community. You remember Kappa Carnival?
Yeah.
You know,
I do.
But those are the kinds of things that, yes, that draws people to the university.
I think campus still have a weekend in town, but I don't know that it has the name anymore.
Well, it used to be called Kappa Carnival.
Okay, yeah.
It would just literally swell Carbondale.
They put on their step shows.
They typically did a step show.
Yeah,
right.
Love to watch the step shows.
It was a big deal, but I haven't, like I said, I don't know whether that's just waned or not, you know, that created some excitement like you were talking about.
Yeah, I think there are a number of things that used to be done here that aren't anymore, and I'm not quite sure why.
Well, and part of it has been our loss of some African-American administrators who just took that on and made sure it got put together.
Right.
So, you know, you're thinking of Harvey Welch and when Harold Bardot was here.
Right.
And
Seymour Bryce,
right?
Bryce.
Yeah, they just, these events got put together. They provided kind of the adult structure to make sure they were successful, and we've lost a lot of those leaders.
And as I'm sure you know, people who are involved in fraternities generally sort of attract, but also inspire others younger who are in that same fraternity. That's a big deal. Especially within the Black community. Oh, are you a Kappa? Are you an Alpha? Are you an Omega? Are you?
And then kind of speaks to the notion of increasing the ranks of minority administrators,
right,
to be able to take those leadership roles on. I mean, it feeds on itself.
I know with Maya Angelou, one of the things she always did is talk about her sorors and ask them to stand up. And that was really inspiring to a lot of people. But yeah, we do need more Black administrators.
Mm-hmm. So one concrete and maybe simple step in that direction is something I'm going to echo that I've heard from some students from the involved in the graduate school, undergraduate student government, graduate student government, and the Black Affairs Council, among others. One of the importance of having representation in administrators, especially those committed to recruitment and retention, is that they might have more expertise and passion to make that mission accomplished. And there's one position in particular that I think would be important. It's a long one, but it's called Coordinator for Diversity and Inclusivity Recruitment and Fellowship at the Graduate School. And there was kind of tasked with recruitment and retention of diverse students at the graduate school level. And there was a process being carried out to find that, but then it ended up stopped being carried out. And I think it'd be important to reopen
that. I think that's important in terms of that function, but also partly in just being there and letting people think, oh, wow, they've got Black administrators, they've got Black faculty members, they have Blacks in the positions I'd like to have. In terms of that, now I'm not sure that we really speak to that very well. And so we really do.
Chancellor, you addressed some of these things in front of the House. I mean, you actually talked about student campus life, I think, for...
Campus life is a distinguishing characteristic that you need to have that differentiates the fact that the education that we're committed to providing is more than just in the classroom. It's about an experience that allows people to grow emotionally and to grow intellectually beyond what happens in the classroom. It's centrally important to the health and vibrancy of a institution. As we, you know, one of the great problems that drove our enrollment challenges is the fact that we lost much of the vibrancy in our campus life, which made, why do I want to come all the way down to Carbondale when the experience I get taking English composition is effectively fungible no matter where I would go? There's nothing special of why you'd want to be here. And you know, I understand why it happened, because you know, when you're faced with budget crisis, you have to make hard decisions, but sometimes the hard decisions that you have to make are the easier path isn't necessarily the right decision that you want to make. And those things impacted the overall quality of the educational experience for our students. So when you talk about I can't announce it publicly here, but I'm going to tell you on April 28th, we're going to have a big concert here, which everybody here is going to be very excited about. I can't announce until Monday. I'm embargoed. But
is it someone I would recognize?
It's someone I didn't recognize.
No, I was going to say.
That means it's really popular. If none of us know who it is, except
given the names I signed off, I don't know. But the students.
The students.
But, you know, really, not to belabor, but this predates budget stuff.
I know.
Somewhere along the way, Carbondale became so risk averse to doing anything that we got out of the business of having a campus with a strong
having fun, a strong student life
component, and we've got to get some of that back.
It started with the push to get rid of Halloween.
It did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I had one, in fact, a gentleman who was here earlier today ran into me at the subway one time, and he says, "I know how to increase enrollment." And I said, "Why?" He said, "Bring back Halloween."
Everybody from my area came here. This was the party school 20 years ago.
But you know what? You can be a party school and be an intellectual center.
Absolutely.
Look at University of Virginia.
Absolutely.
UVA is one of the best institutions academically in the country, and is known as one of the best party schools in the country because they have great times. The students are engaged in the community. They work hard, they study hard, and they play hard.
And you know what?
We can do the same thing here.
They are lifelong friends.
Absolutely.
The people who graduate from UVA are UVAers.
You don't have to go to
eternity.
Go to Illinois. Go to Urbana-Champaign.
So my comments are very practical. I think there are ways that the board could help campus initiatives. So just listening to the conversation here, the work that's going on HBCUs. We're developing HBCU pathways right now. Yeah. So Tara Colbrown in our graduate admissions office has been making visits with faculty to HBCUs to create pathways from HBCUs to our graduate programs. And so I want to make sure that we're aligning and coordinating, not working at cross purposes.
Yeah.
So if that's someplace that we're already making visits, can we?
We need to have Wes coordinating with your folks.
Yes, can we pull these kinds of things together? So. Yeah. Then we heard Mary Carroll talk about Latino and Latina recruitment. Well, in our diversity and inclusion strategic plan that we're rolling out in pieces right now, which will be fully operational in the fall, there's a commitment to working on Latina and Latino recruitment. And so Scott Bellabradic and his folks are already working in that area. I just want to make sure that we're coordinating and not working at cross purposes. I just think that's critically important. And then I think in terms of outreach, as Dr. Chapman is talking to people, having mentors for our students, yeah. having alumni mentors who come back to campus, who show our students what an SIUE or SIUC or a degree has meant for them in their lives, and providing real feedback to them and advice is critical. And so I think that's a place where you can help. And on our campus, we're having biweekly dialogues to try to improve campus climate on issues related to racial justice and social justice. And so I'd invite you to participate in those if you wanted to. I don't know if that's appropriate, but I think
You're also having ambassadors for recruitment, because I signed up for that as well.
Yes.
So there's programs at SIUE, and I'm assuming C, too, that allow that. Sorry.
I just had some comments, but go ahead, finish.
No, I think there are a number of things where integrating what we're doing and supporting each other can only be helpful. I think this is an area where we have real commitment as a campus. And knowing that the board is supportive of that, we have a faculty strategic hiring initiative. We're trying to figure out how do you develop your own, how do you create pathways? Maybe that involves PhD students at Carbondale and a pathway to professorships at Edwardsville. Maybe we don't need to look further than that, but I think there are ways that we're not capitalizing on opportunities that do exist. If we're out there as an institution trying to figure out how do we navigate the state rules, how do we make sure that we overcome barriers, how do we figure this out, well, perhaps that's something the president's office could help us with. I apologize.
No. You need to apologize. So I had some calls, just taking some notes, and this is just really, really interesting, just from Dr. Portwood's comments about, and reflecting on our own personal experiences here at SIU, about increasing cultural and social activities on campus. Every day for me was a social and cultural experience on campus because of playing football. Every day, from training table in the morning to practice to weightlifting to film study, I was surrounded by people that didn't look like me, didn't come from the same background as I did.
Well, everybody had shorter hair than you.
That's true. Not anymore.
Not true.
But, and I find it really fascinating that every year, and I think the ADs did this last month, I listened in, but every year our ADs will stand out there and we'll talk about how the average GPA in athletics is higher than the student body. Well, it's not because football players are smart, I can assure you of that. It's because the amount of the investment in advisement and mentorship, the things that you're talking about, that it's having people in your life that are telling you, hey, I know you had a late night last night, but you need to get your butt into class. Those are certain things that happen on a daily basis with athletes. And so when we talk about that peer-to-peer recruitment, let me tell you something. Friday night of a recruiting trip, you're not hanging out with a football coach. You're hanging out with the guys on the team. It's peer-to-peer recruitment. It is exactly what you're talking about. And so I think there's really some lessons to be learned in looking at athletics and thinking, how is it that consistently, every year, and it's going to be this way continually, but looking at that and saying, what are some things that we can learn that we can double down on advisement? I know that costs money, but how do we develop this peer-to-peer mentality of recruitment, of mentorship? And I think that we have a model already on campus, on both campuses, about what they do well in athletics, and how do we translate that to a larger student population and really learn from the things that they do well.
You're absolutely correct. The graduation rate of our student athletes is 70%. The average graduation rate of the campus at large is 43%. And it's not because the football players and basketball players are not so much smarter than everybody else.
I mean, proved that.
Has everything to do with being part of a larger family, in which people looked after you, that people were responsible for providing
very
the guidance to
a
diverse family.
Absolutely.
That's responsible for moving you forward. And we're going to fix that, as I committed at the board meeting. In 2025, we're going to have a 55% four-year graduation rate and a 65% six-year graduation rate. There's no reason why we can't do it. We've already demonstrated by our student athletes. We have that capability in-house, and we will do it.
Joel, I think you bring up, and you, everyone here actually, the three of you reminded me of something that I've heard kind of going on campus, where some students have taken it upon themselves to help with their retention effort, because they know that the like culture of care is one of the things that like keeps your head in the game. And there's some students of color who are working on a mentorship, peer-to-peer mentorship, called Lifting While We Climb, I believe. And I think that if it becomes a true thing that is a legit operation, it'd be a wise decision to support things like that in any way that we can, whether it be through publicity or finances or just support or giving them a space to use or something. And I'm not involved in it, but I've been like approached for suggestions on like how to deal with going about growing something like that. But supporting student things that are happening on campus in regards to great way to start.
And I don't want to shut us down, but we need to move on. And obviously this is important to everyone. So this is just the start of probably several meetings where we'll have continued discussions on these issues. So.
See, so Shirley, you got your 20 minutes.
Thank you, Shirley.
I was going to have a 20-minute presentation and a 10-minute discussion.
Thank you.
I thought we had an hour, and I was going to take half.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
We'll give you more time next meeting,
right.
I promise. All right, and Trustee Gilbert, Judge Gilbert wanted to talk about...
Well, I'll be short. Mainly it's more of a statement than anything. Mm-hmm. But, you know... hindsight's always 20/20, and this board and the university received some unfortunate, in my opinion, unnecessary publicity during the Carlos hire. And this may be a situation that is common with this university and past administrator hires, and it may be common in academia throughout the country in administrator hires. But I know that we had a contract that this board approved with the chancellor, and we did with Chancellor Pembroke too. But there was a side agreement that, and again, this may have been a situation which has been happening at the university and this university and other universities. There was a side agreement that this board did not know anything about in terms of its terms and conditions. And I'm just speaking, and President Dunn and I have had lengthy discussions about this, that, you know, I had no knowledge of the terms and conditions of this side agreement. I'm not sure any other board member at this table knew anything about this side agreement. And my point is that in future administrative hires, there are no secrets. And, you know, and President Dunn sent one of his emails he sent to us, said there was going to be no secrets about this, about the contract, either before or after the hire. But there were secrets, at least this board member was not aware of, and I don't think any other board member here. And my point is that in future hires of administrators for this university, the board needs to be aware of all agreements and approve all agreements. Because we were all blindsided, at least I was. And I know the chair told me she wasn't aware of it till December 8th. And so my point is that in the future, I think the board needs to be aware of all agreements, written, and actually there shouldn't be any unwritten agreements, but I understand that sometimes that was a decision that the president and the general counsel made. But we need to be aware of
that. And the board chair. I mean, I think, let's be honest, the board chair was involved as well. The prior board chair was involved as well.
Yeah. Well,
I agree with the judge. I don't think we should have any secrets anymore. I was stunned when I read about that.
Yeah. So that's just a statement I make. I just think that we need to be aware of everything.
I agree, and I would like to go on record that I had no knowledge of this either, and this completely caught me off guard and was totally blindsided to this, and certainly was not happy about that. And
Well, I think what comes out of that is exactly as you say. Everything in the future will be entered into in writing.
Right.
And then, you know, it won't be an issue of saying, go do what you need to do, or make sure we get this done. It will be, you'll approve a contract that has everything in it. If it's not there, we're not doing it.
And that's the way contracts... She and I, and with the law school, that's what we live and die by, what's in the contract.
Well, and that's the contract that I thought that I agreed to with Dr. Montemagno, so.
See, I told you I'd agree.
All right. I don't believe that there are any other trustee issues at this point, unless there's something that I'm not aware of that anybody wants to bring up at this point. All right, so in terms of meeting management, there was a few things that we have talked about in the past, and you kind of gave us a list, I think, of items. One of them was the Health Affairs Standing Committee, and I'm not sure what the temperature is for that on the board. I mean, is that something?
Yeah, let me just make mention of this quickly. It's the fact that, not unlike kind of keeping a tab or a list of items that come up that trustees may raise for trustee issues at a retreat. It's also the case that I've got kind of a list of things. Anytime there's a retreat on meeting management, I just put out there. The list does not intend or assume that you want to change anything. Just rather the case that there are things that you may want to think about. If there's no interest in doing anything, changing anything, it's fine, and we'll just sit out there till the next time. So I'll just run down it quickly.
Yeah, and there was one of them that I'm interested in. So
well, and what I didn't put on here was number of meetings, which
correct. We had to discuss as well.
Came up this morning. So the Health at First Standing Committee is one that had been out there from the discussion of the School of Medicine report days. Another one I throw out there, are you okay with how we're doing the executive officer reports on Thursday morning? They, you know, they do take some time. We've added in Jerry as one of the executive officers who now gives one of those reports. If, you know, we do get fairly involved in those. If you want to think about doing anything differently there, that's a possibility. A consent agenda is kind of a mini omnibus where you take numerous actions, just do it in one motion. You wouldn't even necessarily have a report on it. An example of this might be, you know, some of the smaller renovation projects that take place. And typically you think about Rich Walker, who we've had at a meeting, and might have three or four of those
curves.
He speaks to in a row.
Curves.
Just do,
curves.
Yeah, you just do one, you know, because there's everybody agrees that, yeah, it's fine. We don't have to have discussion. Trustee representation on search committees came up.
Bingo.
In terms of both chancellor searches and how to handle that, whether, because by default we just use student trustees.
And we had absolutely no access
to
any information.
No, because
and
they
we
did
were
what
blindsided.
They were supposed
right.
to
we
do.
Were blindsided.
They did what they were supposed to do and kept it in house.
And I personally feel like if I'm voting on the candidate and it comes down to this board, that at least one trustee should be involved, so that we have some kind of a historical background. So I feel like we should have representation on any type of search committee that the hire will come before this board. That's my opinion of
and
that.
And so what hires do come before us? I know, obviously.
Yeah,
well, that could
a
be
few.
A lot. I mean,
that's
when you're looking
few.
At the salary
almost,
threshold, that's a bunch.
Almost everything. There's a very small
Well, maybe
category.
We need to limit that then.
I mean,
perhaps.
you might want to think about senior level individuals.
Correct.
Basically, vice chancellor, chancellor, per year,
okay.
Or vice provost, dean provost of the medical school.
Okay, so I think is that
it sounds
something
like
that
you would be ready to entertain some language at the right, probably policy language, on that.
Correct. I guess Luke, that would be.
Yeah, perhaps something.
Okay.
You know, we have numerous UROs, university-related organizations. That act as independent entities, nonprofit entities on behalf of the university. There are other related audit reviews or financial reviews. Whether or not you want to start building in time for those at audit committee, typically we haven't. We just try to ensure that copies get filed with Kim Labonte, but whether you would want to start looking at
do you have any preference?
SIU Medicine, WSIU, that type of thing. We haven't done membership in AGB, the Association of Governing Boards, for some number of years. I'm not pushing it. It's just I keep it on the list, whether you're okay. Oh, audio streaming, I skipped that.
That's an interesting
whether there's interest in trying to put that together.
Can we back up to AGB for a second?
I'm just going down through the list. You do whatever you like as trustees and talking about it.
Pick a topic.
No, I was just curious about the advantages and then the disadvantages other than membership fees for
AGB. Didn't they bash us or something?
They bash. They bash us. Mm-hmm.
They bash us?
They bash us, yeah. The SIU board when I got hired.
Everybody had
because
a bad
been,
taste in their mouth.
Because I'd been 1 year at Youngstown State and there was an article about SIU poaching away a president.
Have we forgiven them?
I don't know. I mean, I'm just simply, I know
that's the history of why we dropped the membership at the Board of Trustees level.
But the advantages to having that membership are?
Reduced conference fees.
Do we want to
get you get a magazine.
In the future?
I get the magazine anyway.
Well, you're getting the magazine because the foundations are members, so
why do I need to pay
for
it if I already get the magazine?
Because the foundations are members.
I already get the magazine.
$20,000 fee.
Oh, it's expensive. Yeah.
How much?
A year. $20,000 a year.
That sounds a little high, but it's hot. But it's probably five figure, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you'd be probably remember better than I would.
10,
it's
15.
It's high.
Is there a listing of acronyms that you guys use?
Yeah.
Association of Governing Boards.
Of colleges and universities or something like that.
You know.
RMEs.
I don't particularly want to pay $20,000 when I get the magazine for free, and I don't know that I'm going to any conferences. I'll be happy to make a copy of it for all. Yeah.
If you want to go to meetings, you can go to meetings. They have a website and
don't
do a lot of things off the website.
No.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, don't you think we're going to have meetings?
You can pay a lot of full membership fees if you want to go to something for AGB. You can pay a lot of full conference fees for a lot of trustee meetings by the time you hit that $15,000 threshold.
It's not like we have an 80-member board.
Right.
And, of course, who knows what the fee would be then. But,
right.
And we would get that money back.
So maybe you should just take it off your list, because it's been on your list for forever.
Yeah, that's fine.
All right. Audio streaming and meetings, though, I think is an interesting topic and one we probably should discuss. So, because I think most open meetings nowadays are streamed, aren't they?
You see a lot of city governments, municipalities. You notice I didn't put video streaming. That gets into a much more complicated issue.
Good or bad?
But,
I'm looking at John Charles.
Legislature, both the audio stream committees, they video stream some committees, all the General Assembly proceedings. It's just, again, a service that connects and engages the board with the public for those who want to click in and listen to a meeting. I'm not pushing it. It's just...
Chicago Tribune had inquired...
They had inquired.
...about a prior meeting. If we... Now, what we have to do is post any board meeting recordings on our website, and we do that within a day of the meeting.
Yeah.
They just wouldn't get it live. So if we're only talking about audio streaming, someone only to be able to hear audio,
yes,
real time, you know, there's a day delay. So for newspaper people, there'd be a day behind if they didn't come from Chicago.
It's the preference of the board. I just...
And nobody's pushing it, and there hadn't, other than you get a reporter request on occasion, nobody's really...
But they're going to get it anyhow, eventually.
A day later, they could go out on
It's a question of whether it's a service you wish to provide to the public. I mean, that's what it comes down to. Nobody's really saying take it on, pushing it, or anything else.
It was part of the one of the higher ed reform bills from a couple of years ago, and the legislature pulled that section out.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a...
So
they took it off.
So we'll table that until it becomes an issue.
We have to deal with it,
okay,
if it ever comes to that.
I'll say, I mean, as time goes on, maybe I'll get more requests, but maybe I've had 2 in 10 years.
Okay. Oh, okay. Then I think we'll hold off on that then.
What happens if you have a special meeting, though, when you don't have the ability to live stream it? Does that cause you to say that, since I've been given live streaming it, now I'm going to have a special meeting and the venue is
there? Live stream special.
Well, if you have a place, you don't have the technology available, you don't have the high enough bandwidth to be able to do
it. Yeah, if you came out to something like this, you'd have to make sure you had a means to do it.
Yeah, I think we're best probably just not to do that, particularly if you're thinking about timing of your need for meetings. Okay.
And the other thing was just whether there's sufficient written communication, background support materials, that type of thing.
I think we've sort of addressed that when we talk about our 10-day rule.
That was easy.
Okay.
You're not worried about audits.
Okay. The only, I still am not real sure about the Health Affairs Standing Committee. I didn't get a clear picture of where everybody...
Well, a number of meetings. Is the board saying to go to 6?
Well, yeah, I was going to get to that next.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
But Health Affairs Standing Committee, is there...
Is that something that we should consult with Dean Cruz?
That's a good point, too.
To see if he sees a need for it, because it would deal with a lot of things under his purview.
Yeah, I mean, it would, but again, to reiterate the point this morning, it's not just school of medicine.
Right. There's more than that.
So the advantages and the disadvantages, obviously the disadvantages that it lengthens our meetings.
I don't know if it does, though. If something's got to come before the board, period,
it's just
a matter of how it funnels through.
May not see that happen. Maybe like audit committee to some degree, you're not going to see it happen very often.
I think we need to bring maybe Jerry in on that. We'll talk.
And we're not in a hurry.
No.
Right. Because we can always get things there through academic or finance.
This is something that came up back during the School of Medicine discussion,
mm-hmm,
that was kind of hanging out there as a possibility, and so it's gotten carried. If nothing comes out of it, well, that'll disappear too. But there are issues where it's going to be helpful. It could be helpful to have board guidance on a direction you want to go, as opposed to kind of like we would with the school of law. It's like, well, okay, let's kind of pull this out, navigate, see where we go, and then hope the board doesn't get unglued because we've gone out over our skis, you know, to have a group to gather with to have some discussion about proposals.
Well, and that healthcare board that the general's sitting on is up and running, and he's in Springfield.
The joint annual medical trustee, or the joint medical trustees.
Yes, and that healthcare, there's also the new one.
Well, yes, SIU Medicine's board, the URO board.
So that may provide a need at some point in time. So I think maybe we're just a bit early and perhaps talk to the general and talk to Dean Cruz and go from there. We got a few more minutes and we'll be back on schedule. But last thing is the meeting schedule. And I know, Marcia, you had spoken to me about changing and not having a meeting in July. And the reason why we always have a meeting in July is like the one meeting date we need to have, because that is the Joint Alumni Association reception that is widely attended in Springfield, and it's been going on for 5 years. In fact, they've moved to bigger and bigger venues. So I don't want to rain on their parade and change that up. So actually, July is the one meeting we have to have. I think, you know, like I said, it's up to the board, but I think we used to have 6 meetings, and I know there's been some talk about expanding from 5 back to 6. So if that's what we want to do, I think that's going to be up to everyone here, and then we can build that in around July's meeting.
What was the schedule with 6 meetings?
We had a May meeting.
So April, May, and July.
Which is
February.
Which
February,
is a problem.
April,
was
May,
a
July.
Was a yeah was a problem okay, because it's always around commencement weekends and just that's not good.
Would there be a better month to add? I mean, because right now we have July, September, and December.
The thing about the fall is there isn't a lot of activity going on in the fall for board matters. More activity happens in the spring.
Okay.
Tuition fees. promotion and tenure of faculty.
But it does sound like with the RME discussion we could be having.
We could be very busy in the fall.
Or no.
Is that right? I mean,
hopefully we'll be very busy in the spring.
And this might be only for a year.
Right, man, it's not gonna be forever.
So in order to space them out, do we have to have a February meeting or could it be a January meeting?
We don't, we just have to meet quarterly.
Could it just be the odd numbered months, and then that would take away the December meeting, which always is a struggle for the student trustees because that's typically finals week.
So you're suggesting then, tell me the months.
January,
so
March.
January, March, May, July, September, November.
Yeah,
and
do it if you do it late November, kind of have the holiday.
The only problem with that is May. The only one that gets to be
but
a challenge.
But if you went a little later.
Okay, so January, March, May, July, September, November.
Yeah, and then November might be a challenge because of Thanksgiving break week.
And my concern about March is there's 2 weeks of spring break for each campus.
And the other thing is I thought it's been important to chancellors to have the tuition discussion in February.
I thought so too. You're right.
Well, it probably what you'd see happen there is it would move to January, March.
That would just put a little bit of a crunch on the campuses to get everything ready for that.
January is during winter break, probably. So it'd be winter break and spring break, and then.
It not necessarily. We can pick dates within the month that don't conflict, right? Because I mean, there is no ideal time when it's perfect for everyone and everything. So I would be fine.
Later
with
January, later March, later
odd,
May.
Odd number of months.
July is what it is. The
July,
one meeting
July.
That is what it is. Oh, September and November.
Yeah.
We should just build around that.
Yeah. Okay, so then we're looking at late January, late March, late May, when it is in July, and then September and November when we can.
Yeah, and later, you know, maybe later in November. Maybe even that. I mean, if we get it by late, calendar is going to be different every year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to just prevent getting into finals week.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's manageable. It's university business.
Yeah, I mean, it was like late November, very first part of December. It's still a week away from finals usually.
Maybe that's it. Yeah. First week in December rather than the second week
after Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Immediately after Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
So that means we would have to change our December date now because we already have a July and September. Right now, we're already meeting in April. I don't know that May makes sense this year. So for this year, we would just keep April, July, September, and perhaps change our December meeting date.
To maybe the 6th.
To maybe the 6th. Let's look at that real quick.
And if for some reason for the RMEs or whatever those...
We would have a special meeting.
We might have a special meeting in the spring.
Okay. December 5th and 6th then. Mm-hmm. So the only meeting date that would change this year would be December's. We'd push it back a week.
We push it back a week to the 5th and 6th.
Correct. And then because of this retreat, we'll essentially have 6 meetings this year, and if necessary, we'll have a special meeting going forward. And I think we limit it to just, hopefully, just that.
I mean, you and I'll figure that out.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Does that work?
Mm-hmm.
Would we keep July and September the
ask,
second Thursday of the month?
Retreats have seemed to be pretty helpful. So are we saying 6 plus a retreat, or are we saying...
Sorry.
That's a good point, though.
No, but I think that that's been... Retreats have historically been a opportunity to discuss kind of the more, instead of the in-the-weeds sort of details, the more kind of vision of the system and campuses moving forward. And
we
so,
could make May the retreat month, the May meeting, and tackle business if need be.
A combination.
Part of it's how you use your Wednesday work sessions, too. I mean, if you can tee up some discussion topics using those Wednesdays, and again, everybody's traveling and some having to get out of work, et cetera, but... That's always a possibility, too, to knock out some
Wednesday
stuff.
Wednesday retreat slash...
Well, just work session. And,
yeah,
you know, take on chunkier topics at that point.
I'm okay. I just wanted to bring it up for discussion.
No, I agree. I think it makes sense. But if we could kind of use it as a May as a dual retreat meeting month, it would probably make good sense.
Good.
Okay.
Wait, I have one more question on that. And this is
sure.
More towards Lou. With the May meeting, if it's later in May, then it's possible that both of the student trustees have graduated at that point. Is
sure.
that an issue?
Your terms technically run
through July 1st. Okay.
So you're good.
Although there are also requirements that you are full-time students to be eligible. So
that's okay, though, in the summer.
I was going to say,
it's all right.
Yeah, we've had that happen before where we've had a
post-continuation.
Yeah.
And we've met in June.
Started in June 30th.
It is June 30th.
Yeah.
Or we'll just withhold degrees until.
I'm sure they appreciate that. Yeah.
Until the 1st of July.
Technically, they don't come in the mail until August.
We on schedule, Ms. Chair?
We are. Let's take a recess.
Well, thank you.